From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk from March 8th, 2024. Checking the calendar, the Bucks are on the West Coast with all three California teams this week, the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Kings. The Brewers are looking ahead to the home opener April 2nd, and the Milwaukee Admirals are home Saturday night with Grand Rapids. The sports show is at State Fair Park this weekend, and the PBR, not Pabst Blue Ribbon, but the Professional Bull Riders, are in town at Fiserv. And Saturday, it's the St. Patrick's Day Parade in downtown Milwaukee. Has a lot of stuff going on. A 62-year-old man in Germany got 217 COVID vaccinations over 29 months. Doing the math, that's one COVID vaccination every 4 days, and he suffered no ill effects. But he wasn't any more protected than the people who got the regular three-shot regimen. The mystery is why he did it, and he's keeping it a secret. Is it possible that it's simply a case of, oh, it hurts so good? China and Russia are in talks about putting nuclear power plants on the moon. The commute will kill you alone all by itself. From Sesame Street, Cookie Monster dipped his toe in the political arena with this statement, Cookie Monster hates shrinkflation, Cookie Monster like many cookies in bag. I did that for the six-year-old listeners who are our clients. Bowling is back, not like pickleball, but it's back. A bowling alley in Pittsburgh is promoting the ultimate experience, nude bowling. They claim nude bowling is for everyone. No, it's not. Don't forget to spring ahead this weekend or you'll be an hour late on Monday. Unless you're in Arizona, you guys are just staying just the way you are. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Tough week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ down 1.2%, closing at the bell at 16,085. The S&P 500 down 13 points this week. That's 0.3%, closing at 5,124. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 365 points on the week, 0.9%, closing at 38,723. Despite the bad week, a good year overall, the NASDAQ up 7.3, the S&P up 7.7, and the Dow up 3.1, all including dividends. Benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury moved a little bit lower this week, closing at 4.09% after starting the week at 4.18, a sign perhaps that markets continue to believe that rate cuts are in order. Of course, I think, Adam, maybe the place to start this week is just overall tone. It was an up and down week. We set some new highs. We gave a little back, but hard to be too upset given the recent run we've had.
Yeah, it's been quite the run that we've had so far this year. In the last 18 weeks, 16 of them have been up weeks. If you look back since October, the market has been on a sprint essentially since last October. Certainly been a good start to this year. It's also good to see that the rise has been on just basic fundamental news, right? It's still historically low interest rates, as you mentioned, 10-year treasury about 4.1%. Corporate earnings, we're basically finishing up earnings season so far this year. Earnings have been decent. Earnings projections for the rest of this year still pretty good, and that's what's taken us higher. But you sprint this far, this fast, this long, and 16 up weeks out of the last 18, it's okay if we pause and catch our breath. Certainly we saw that this year. And, you know, maybe we got to have a little bit of that from time to time. You got to pause and catch your breath.
Yeah, I think it's healthy. A reminder as well that, you know, last week was kind of the tail end of earnings season. And then this week, not a ton of market news pushing us around, not a ton of fundamental stock-driven news pushing us around. And so really what's left is, all right, what's the Fed going to do in a week here? And that, I think, is the only piece that's left as far as kind of near-term news, it's really going to move the needle. Some economic news this week we'll get into, but Art, I think a good reminder for clients that, you know, if the general direction is positive for stocks, that it's probably more important just to participate than it is to maybe get too fancy in terms of trying to figure out the when and the where.
Yeah, why the market does what it does on a daily basis is pretty obvious after the fact. We just don't know what's going to happen before it does. This week, earlier in the week, when Chairman Powell spoke, the market got excited. It went up because he suggested, or his words seemed to suggest, that we were close to the point at which they're going to lower interest rates. But to a certain extent, I think the market is missing the point. I think this is a liquidity-driven, you know, rally. What's been going on? There's so much money out there, over $6 trillion in cash that could move into the market. So I think we could go higher. But getting back to your point, the way we invest for our clients, they're going to make money, you know, over time, because they're going to be in the market, but they're not going to be overly invested. And so we can enjoy the ride here, make enough, hope we don't lose too much when things go the other way. But I think there's every reason to expect, as Adam suggested, that this very strong rally we've had now for weeks, and now quite frankly over a year, should continue absent some kind of, you know, immutable force that might strike us that we're not expecting at some point in time.
Perhaps one of the challenges that I think I hear so often is with respect to valuations, right? That maybe there are some things out there that might serve as a little bit of a force of gravity, right? And slowing the rise down, you know, to Adam's point at the beginning, maybe that's a healthy thing, right? Maybe we need some of these pauses to let the impact of gravity have its way, but you know, that valuation conversation is still something that needs to be had.
Not let the impact of gravity have its way, but let earnings catch up with valuations, right? You take a look at P on the market, it's around 20, 21, which is a little rich historically. But a lot of that, remember, is still driven by the Magnificent Seven. There's some lofty valuations in the tech stocks, but you take out the top 7-10 names and you look at the bottom 490, average PE on the rest of the market still 17-ish, so about average. But if we just pause here and you take a look at some of the earnings that are expected to roll in for the rest of this year, eventually they will catch up with valuations. For what it's worth, Joel, in the email that you sent around before we sat down for our podcast, forward-looking expectations for earnings growth this year is in the 10 to 12% range, and that's pretty good.
Yeah, but then there's cryptocurrency. Now, what's the rational basis for that stuff setting records or gold setting records? So I'm coming back to my point about liquidity. There's so much money out there. It's floating around. If the Fed lowers interest rates, as is anticipated, then people will be able to borrow for less and maybe invest even more and drive prices higher. So at least we deal with things that we think are rational, price earnings multiples, interest rates, and that's what drives the performance of stocks and bonds over time. But there's other people out there who don't care. They're just going to keep throwing money at whatever they think is going to go up. And given the current environment, you know, in this country, driving the world economically, that's why we're on board and we want to be in the game, even if prices go higher.
Yeah, cryptocurrency, I think, is the perfect example there, right, of supply and demand. And if you create more demand, which we've done recently by allowing for exchange-traded product, well, okay, temporarily you're going to see a lot more people interested in a limited resource. By its very nature, Bitcoin is something that only has a set number of coins out there. Of course, the challenge is that beyond that immediate scarcity, you have to figure out how to value something like Bitcoin, and there isn't a track record for doing that. There isn't really a history of saying, well, this is what an alternative currency or a digital currency should be worth. Because we don't have enough track record. And so you're going to get periods of mania. You're going to get bubbles. Stuff is going to survive those bubbles, but it's really hard to know at the start of it what's going to make its way through.
The way we value Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, it's what the last person paid for it.
The greater fool's theory.
Seriously. I mean, that's
Absolutely.
How we value it, is Absolutely. What was the last person, what did they pay for it? And I don't know if I want to be the last person wanting to buy it. For all of my clients listening, you'll know because you've seen on my desk, I have one of those little Bitcoin tokens. It doesn't represent an actual electronic Bitcoin. It's just one of those little metal tokens you can get off of eBay for a few bucks. But I leave it on my desk for a constant reminder to myself and to others that smart people can make foolish decisions when they let emotions get involved. And I think that's just a good reminder for stuff like this.
Yeah, helpful to have those kind of visuals as a way to say, hey, maybe let's temper our expectations. Let's be a little more realistic. And of course, the Fed has been tempering expectations on kind of the path for interest rates really for much of the last year or 18 months, the expectation for a long time was we'd get cuts maybe early this year. That shifted sometime mid-year last year to, well, maybe it's summer, depending on who you ask, maybe it's even later in the year. But our Jay Powell this week coming out and saying, yeah, the foundation is kind of being laid here for rate cuts, that the things we were most concerned about are becoming less and less concerning, and maybe we can get to those rate cuts here in the near future.
Yeah, he was the most positive I've ever heard him on the likelihood of rate cuts coming in the not-too-distant future. Balancing that, though, later today there was comment by Loretta Mester, head of the Cleveland Fed, who raised concerns about lowering interest rates too quickly. Even though we have interest rates that should be suppressing economic activity, given that the economy continues to expand at tremendous rates and people are still getting jobs and we still have inflation out there, I think there's every reason to be somewhat cautious. And so even though he was a bit sanguine in his comments this week, that could change. So I don't want to, you know, place any bets on what's going to happen or when.
Speaking of job numbers, Joel, we got some job numbers this week. I thought maybe you could kind of add some context to that.
Sure. Yeah. It's you know, if gravity is the Fed's higher interest rates trying to bring inflation down, jobs have been defying gravity because month after month, employers keep adding jobs, and it was a surprisingly strong jobs report. They added 275,000 jobs in the month of February, which is above the 230,000 that they've averaged the 12 months before that, which is very healthy. It was across the board. It was pretty broadly based, the job growth. There were some job categories, some occupations, some fields that hired above average, including construction. And one that I always like to look at is bars and restaurants. So the economy's probably doing okay if more people are going out to bars and restaurants, to the degree that bars and restaurants are adding more workers.
Well, they're going to have to with that nude bowling that Max was talking about.
Yeah, I was wondering, do they still provide shoe rentals for that?
Oh boy!
but you know, that said, I mean, even though it was a strong jobs report that really reflects the strength of the economy right now, there are other signs that say that, you know, maybe there are some chinks in there, and maybe things are a little weaker, which would help, you know, convince the Fed to drop those rates.
Yeah, you know, a rise, for example, in the unemployment rate, some revisions to prior month's labor data all point to a labor market that, yeah, it's been strong enough, but maybe it is finally showing some signs that it's going to come back down to earth at some point, that the Fed will be able to do what they need to do, and that the labor market itself is going to give us the all clear for, well, maybe the inflationary pressures of higher wages, maybe the inflationary pressures of, you know, large numbers of job openings and not enough workers will finally give way to a market where, yeah, inflation might be a touch hotter than 2, but it's not going to percolate back up to 6 or 7 that so many fear. And maybe that is finally what it takes for Powell, as he said this week, that, you know, rates are well above neutral at this point, to finally get back to whatever that neutral rate is. And again, that's probably a full 9 or 10 quarter point cuts from where we are. So we're not suggesting that rates are neutral by the end of the year or even maybe by mid-year next year. Unless something really goes wrong, they're going to take their time to bring rates back down to where they're supposed to be. But I think the reality is, well, okay, the goal all along has been, let's get the economy back to a place where it's not too hot, without making it too cold in the other direction.
Yeah, and we started to see this in this week's job numbers and the revisions that we had to previous months. You know, the once overheating economy is now showing signs that we're finally starting to cool off to something of more manageable temperature. And the Fed's plan is working, and we're still progressing towards a soft landing. And, you know, a couple months ago, I gave an analogy of like a road trip, and maybe kind of bring out that that metaphor once more, because the Bailey family is about to head on a road trip. down to Gulf Shores, Alabama, but you spend a lot of time on the road cruising, and you spend so much at 75 miles an hour, and eventually you slow down. And you got to ask yourself the question, well, why are we slowing down? Is it because there's an accident ahead, or is it because we've reached our destination? And at least in terms of the economy, it's the latter. I think we have reached our destination, at least as the Federal Reserve has defined it. And now we can exit the freeway system and kind of take county highways from here. And it's true for a road trip. And it's also a good analogy for where we are with rates in the economy right now.
And Joel, perhaps a couple of other economic indicators that stand out, in particular, you know, revolving debt, the credit card debt that's out there, that's elevated. Other signs that there's some delinquencies in other areas of the world, auto loans in particular. You know, there's more than just the labor market. Yeah, the labor market paints a picture of, well, if you want a job, you can have one. Your wages have grown pretty substantially. But, you know, perhaps some signs that maybe the spending glut that we were dealing with may be starting to normalize a little bit.
Yeah, Kyle, you know, one of the things that I look at is the, you know, from week to week, looking at all these reports that come out, I try to look at the longer term, not just the how the numbers changed from 1 week to the next or 1 month to the next, but to kind of look at longer term numbers. And a lot of these numbers for a lot of these indicators are back to where they were or about where they were in February of 2020 before we were hit by COVID. And the economy then was pretty healthy. It was doing pretty well, and it had been a record market as in terms of the number of months of growth without a recession. And people were starting, because of the length of it, were saying, well, we're going to have a recession soon, and didn't know that it was going to be COVID that would cause it. But so just kind of looking at a lot of these things over that longer term, it's encouraging. But there are always indicators in here that, you know, as some things are firing up, other ones are down. One of the ones that's been weak lately is factory orders. Those have been weak for a while. We got news on that this week. The services sector from the Institute for Supply Management, that report showed us that that industry keeps growing, keeps expanding, but it was weaker last month than it was the month before that. So there are different things in there. One thing, we talked about this on the podcast, is productivity. Mm-hmm. The numbers that we get from the Bureau of Labor Statistics don't reflect everything that's going into to productivity or where it will be. But even that's encouraging. The average annual productivity for 2023 was up, and it was down the 2 years before that.
What I think is so interesting about the productivity number, you know, we look at the government data, the same for inflation or any number of reports, but you can go to the employers themselves, you can go to the retailers themselves, and Costco released their earnings report this week. The two things they pointed to, one was they have held on to all the productivity gains they made since COVID, right? You think about how much more efficient businesses had to be because they were operating with fewer workers, they were operating in restricted environments in which, you know, maybe they had to distance workers, maybe they had to do things in a new way. And Costco made clear in this last quarter's earnings report and in their comments that, no, we've held on to those productivity gains, which has driven our bottom line. But the other that really stood out to me, which we've been talking about for a while, is they were talking about how inflation's just not an issue for them anymore. And in many ways, they're taking price reductions in areas in which we've been complaining really for the last 2 years now about price increases, and specifically food, right? And specifically fresh produce and things that, you know, we've been pointing to as areas where, well, yeah, inflation's down, but it's not down for me yet. And perhaps it's a sign that if Costco's doing it, maybe the roundies of the world follow suit. Yeah, I know it's not roundies anymore, but maybe they follow suit. And maybe we do finally start to see some of those price reductions taking hold, in part, I think, driven by some productivity gains. But as they put in the earnings release, some of it has to do with the fact that the input costs have actually gone down for them now. And so they want to be leaders on price. They want to be the people that are saying, no, we're going to be cheaper than your grocery store or your local 7-Eleven. And I think that's clear in their announcement. yeah, we're not seeing the inflation problem anymore the way that so many did recently. And I think if you question the government data, as many do, right, of, oh, they're just going to paint the picture that Biden wants them to paint, or they're just going to paint the picture that Trump wanted to paint 4 years ago, doesn't matter who's in office. If you question that data, well, I think you could look to the actual businesses that are out there reporting and go, well, they're only beholden to their shareholder, and their shareholders are getting the information straight from them on here's what the picture really looks like. And so I think I'm pretty encouraged by kind of the inflation conversation, not from what the data from the government says, but from what we're actually hearing from the businesses out there.
But that's the tie into the stock market going up. So if they're able to do more with less, if we don't have to pay people that much more, and if they can be that much more productive due to artificial intelligence, et cetera, these productivity figures, if we continue to see this pattern, I think that's a precursor of, again, higher stock prices down the road.
And you also touched on an interesting point, the tie between productivity and inflation. If worker productivity goes up, you can pay your workers more without having to worry about increasing inflation in the aggregate. That's just kind of the way the math works out. And we've seen some meaningful productivity gains. We've seen wage gains. But the way that works out in the math, big picture economics, it doesn't necessarily mean a rise in inflation.
Not to mention the wealth effect, which we haven't talked about in a while. And so you have people feeling wealthier because their 401k plans are going up. They're going to spend more money. Now, what they're going to spend it on may be different than what they spent it on a year ago or when they just got out and had of COVID and had to start traveling. And it may not drive prices up because they may shift from one thing that was going up to something else that isn't, or they'll just spend more time at the bowling alley or the local bar.
Clothing optional.
Well, maybe a good place to end it then.
off to the bowling alley.
Yeah. As always, we enjoy doing the program for you. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.